Welcome to Twin Wisdoms. Today we will talk about proxies and a proxy for thought. The word arrives early and does its work quickly. In almost every account of the latest exchange of fire between Iran and Israel, proxy appears within the first breath. Iran's proxy forces, its proxy militias, its proxy war waged through others while its own people go neglected. The word is meant to settle the matter. A state that fights through surrogates, the reasoning runs, is a state that cares nothing for its citizens and everything for its foreign clients. It is therefore irresponsible, illegitimate, and ripe for removal. The conclusion is delivered the moment the word is spoken. This is the trouble with proxy. It is not an argument, but a substitute for one. A proxy, if you like, for thought. It closes the inquiry it pretends to open. Begin with the obvious. No great power conducts its strategy by plebiscite. Alliances, clients, and forward partners are chosen in the rooms where intelligence officers and security advisors meet, not at the ballot box. And they are chosen by every state with reach beyond its borders. The United States has spent the better part of a century arming, funding, and fighting through others, through the Cold War, through NATO, through the bombardment of Yugoslavia, and now through the long supply line that keeps Ukraine in the field. If arming Kyiv to resist invasion is a legitimate exercise of strategic interest, the same logic cannot suddenly become criminal when Tehran arms a Lebanese movement to resist a force that has crossed Lebanon's border. The principle does not change with the passport of the actor invoking it. The Hezbollah case sharpens the point. The movement was not manufactured in Tehran and exported to Lebanon. It grew from Lebanon's Shia communities in response to Israeli invasion, with roots that predate the Islamic Republic itself. To call it simply an Iranian proxy is to erase its history, its grievance, and its agency in a single word, which is precisely what the word is for. I find it useful here to imagine the view from Mars. An observer with no stake in any flag, watching a species sort itself into rival alliances and asking only how these creatures may be judged by one consistent standard. From that vantage, the United States and Iran sit closer together than either would like to admit. Both pursue their interests through partners. Both insist their interventions are defensive and their adversaries aggressive. The honest question is not which state keeps allies, but whether we are prepared to measure all of them by a single rule. And here the demand for one standard turns out to be sharper than it first appears, sharp enough to cut the hand that wields it. For when a single legal measure is actually applied to this conflict, the kind of patient reading the April 2026 ceasefire and the law around it require, the findings are uncomfortable for everyone. The ceasefire bound Israel not to conduct offensive operations against Lebanese targets, preserving only a narrow right of self-defense against a planned, imminent, or ongoing attack. That is a thin exception, and the documented record overflows it. Strikes on town after town, a double-tap attack at Majdal Zun that killed rescue workers as they dug survivors from the first blast. A cluster of attacks on hospitals and medics, tanks ramming UN vehicles, warning shots falling within a meter of peacekeepers. A general claim to full freedom of action is not what the text permits. On the record, Israel breached the agreement, and several of these acts implicate the laws of war independently of any ceasefire. Lebanon, for its part, failed the due diligence obligation it accepted, unable or unwilling to restrain the rocket fire that continued across the line. And the killing of UN peacekeepers on its soil, which the United Nations itself has said may amount to war crimes, is a wound of its own, but the same measure reaches Iran too. And this is the part a partisan diary would prefer to omit. Iran's June strikes, whatever their strategic logic, rest on shaky legal ground. A treaty binds and benefits only its parties. Iran signed nothing, and so cannot claim that Israel's breach of the Lebanon ceasefire was a wrong done to Iran. Nor do the strikes fit the demanding template the International Court of Justice set down for coming to an ally's defense. The victim must declare itself attacked and must ask for help. Lebanon did neither. It pursued extension of the truce instead. A right of collective self-defense cannot be asserted on behalf of a state that has not claimed it. I record this not to retract the argument, but to complete it. The discipline of one standard is double-edged by design. It denies Iran the clean vindication its defenders want, just as it denies Israel the impunity its defenders assume. That is exactly what makes it honest, and exactly what the word proxy is engineered to prevent. The trope lets you skip the law and arrive directly at the verdict you brought with you. So what, after all this, is the real asymmetry? Not innocence against guilt. No party here has clean hands. The asymmetry is impunity. On this record, one actor struck first and most lethally, killed rescuers and medics, and expects to bear no consequence whatever. Another is cast as the origin of all evil, though it acted only after warning and after being struck. The scandal the law exposes is not that one side broke a rule and the other kept it. It is that there is no neutral arbiter to call the breach, and that the conscience of the watching world decides in advance whose violations will be seen and whose will be waved through. Violations pile up across three legal regimes at once, and the only thing applied consistently is the selective gaze. This is why I distrust the comfort the word offers. Proxy is not wrong because Iran has no partners. It plainly does. It is wrong because it is doing the work that thinking should do. It converts a hard question about who struck whom, under what law, to what proportion, into a slogan that has already chosen its villain. It is a thought-terminating word in a situation that demands the opposite. The cure is not a better label. It is the willingness to keep thinking past the label, to test the narrative we find most flattering against the strongest version of the case we like least, and to accept a standard even when it turns and indicts those we are inclined to defend. A conscience that only convicts the other side is not a conscience at all. It is, like the word that protects it, a proxy for thought.